Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
It's another day to change the world. Today's interview is with Dr. Isaac Mostovich. And if you are someone who has ever thought about conducting business across cultures, then this episode is for you. He dives into the type of mindset that you need to have when you're connecting with people that are different from you. We definitely talk about a lot of things like him growing up as a third culture kid in Israel and moving to Europe, also from, you know, moving from Europe to all the other countries he went to, returning back to the UK, running a business in the United States. And we really dive into what he needed to do in order to make sure he was successful in these locations. Hope you enjoy the episode.
In a world where very few people embrace their global identity and seek to understand their neighbors, cross-cultural expert Tayo Roxon is on a mission to bridge this divide. Each week, he'll open your mind with insights from some of the global minds in the world. Get ready, take some notes, and learn how to be the best you that you can be.
Welcome everybody to another episode of As Told by Nomads, and today's episode is with Dr. Isaac Mostovich. Dr. Isaac has been a leader and an innovator in the European diamond industry for 30 years in Belgium, and he's an expert consultant academic in the field of luxury marketing. As a PhD in luxury management from England's University of Northampton, he currently presides over Janus Thinking Limited. He advises Caro Diamonds and integrates personal development and business growth as an inspirational business coach. For these reasons, we're going to be talking to him a lot about his background, how he moved, how he adapted things mid-career to understand the change in diamond market, and why he believes being a luxury consultant was what he was meant to do. Welcome to the show, Isaac.
Welcome. Thank you. Thank you very much.
The pleasure is mine. The pleasure is mine. So I did a little bit about, I talked a little bit about who you are in the intro. Why don't you tell us how you got started, you know, where you're from, and why you moved around so much?
Yeah, okay. I was born in Tel Aviv in Israel. As a kid, as a teenager, Israel was kind of isolated place. That means we had here and there people coming, visiting us from abroad. But Israel was really disconnected. That means for somebody to travel abroad was a big thing. For somebody to come over was even bigger. So we lived here in Israel kind of in isolation, living our own life. Things started to open after 1967, after Six-Day War. More people were coming to visit Israel. So Israel became a little bit more, I wouldn't say cosmopolitan, but started to have an influence from abroad as well. And the few years later, not few years, about 10 years later, when I got married and had an opportunity to move to Belgium, which for me, it was the first time actually that I sat on an airplane traveling abroad. I never flew with the airplane. Everything was new for me. And they arriving to a different country with a different culture, and even when I was within the Jewish community, the Jewish community in Belgium and the Jewish community in Israel, although they had a lot of similarities, I could see the difference in culture because of the economic position that at that time Belgium, where the Jewish community where I lived in Antwerp, Belgium, was very, very affluent, something that I couldn't see here in Israel. The entire community was kind of affluent. Yeah, I could see here and there people who were very wealthy, but you that to have an entire community that lives in a really comfortable life, I couldn't see. It was for me a first time. Then I had a shock meeting people that are not part of my community, people who are with a different culture, with a different language, and the sometimes people that I didn't even understand what they're talking about. And I was invited. To join a very, very successful diamond business, diamond manufacturing business. And the first thing first, I had to learn the to learn to be a polisher. And because of many times that I had to stop working, going back to Israel, the period of forming me as a polisher was a little bit longer than usual. Normally, we were looking for 6 to 9 months for forming a polisher. By me, it took more than a year. Now, sitting there, I could practice my English, but I knew that I had to start to learn Dutch. And then at the same time, I learned French, because French was the ongoing language within the Jewish community. Dutch was the ongoing language in Antwerp. And I had to gain command in two new languages that I didn't know where to start with. So I had to attend school and practice myself and sitting next to the polisher who knew a little bit of English, so he could help me. And I was used to come with my homework and used to correct, to help me correcting my homework. Wow. In Dutch. And it's not only the language, it's the culture. Because Dutch people, Belgium actually was established in 1830, but the people there lived for hundreds of years in the same place, and they developed their own culture and developed their own way of thinking. And when we start to talk to them, start to integrate with them, I had to understand what their culture is. I had to learn to respect a different culture.
Yeah.
And after 1.5 years, all of a sudden I found myself running a polishing plant, because the one who used to run this that polishing plant fell sick. And they, for some time, I took over. He never came back.
Oh, whoa!
No, he took a different job within the, within our operation.
Yeah.
And he moved. Actually, he operated a lot with Africa. So again, he had to have a different culture, and I had to start to work with the Dutch people, and the. When you manage a company, when you manage a factory, it's not enough to know to speak up your opinion, but you have to understand people's feeling. You have to understand people's goals. And especially when the factory that I got was kind of a factory, which was a large factory, but good polishers, but not exactly trying to do its best.
Yeah.
And the I remember sitting with a manager of the factory, and I dictated to him how I want him to polish certain goods. And at a certain at that time, my goal was to cater to two clients of ours that I knew on that they are going to buy the certain type of goods on a regular basis. Every year, an offer would come, and we'd discuss price, and then we have to provide for them with the goods that we accumulated over the year. Now, knowing how to package those goods, I polished my goods in a certain way that a professional who would look at a pile of goods would get sick, because then every diamond looked different. Every diamond was polished in a different way. It was ugly. I remember my father-in-law yelling at me that I destroyed entire production and many, many thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars. I told him, don't worry. I know this pile of goods, we might have a problem with 10 diamonds only, which when you are talking about hundreds of diamonds. Eventually, the customer came and they placed an order, and I started to package and to arrange the order. And as I said, 10 diamonds I had a problem with. He managed to swallow 5 we left with. And this went for 2, 3, 4 years, and then Japan started. Okay, I have a soft, I've kind of loved to Japan. I practice karate for almost 45 years, and my direct teacher is the one who brought karate to the West. And I decided that, okay, if the market there in Japan is starting to grow up, maybe I'll open an office over there. And the first address to ask for help was my teacher, my karate teacher. Does he know somebody who can help me? Of course, he introduced me to one of my colleagues, another student of him. I sent him to Japan, and I followed suit. I moved to Japan, a new culture. Now we are not talking about Europe. We are not talking about the specific culture of Belgium, of the Dutch part of Belgium. We are talking now about the Japanese culture. And here I didn't understand the language at all, but I had to, I had to adapt to their culture. I have to understand their culture. I have to understand what they are doing, and how to behave toward them, how to respect them. And it's quite easy to try to adapt when you talk to people. You talk, you discuss, you ask questions, they answer. But here I'm sitting in front of people who don't speak English, and I don't speak Japanese. And they ask them, and we discuss through an interpreter. And I have to keep on looking in the eyes and follow suit, and trying to understand through the body language, through few words that I catch here and there, what they want, what do they mean. And it was fun. I enjoyed very much that period that I worked in Japan. We worked in Japan for more than 10 years. We started before the bubble economy started. We were one of the few who still stayed a few years after the bubble collapsed. And then I moved to America. And America is again a new world. And you are talking from New York. And New York is not America. Definitely. You talk to New York people, and they are a folk for themselves. They are people for themselves. These are New Yorkers. They are not Americans. They are New Yorkers. But my people, I had one who was located in Los Angeles, different culture, different way of thinking, different behavior, different way of life. And then I had still have my partner in North Carolina, in the South. Again, completely different culture, different behavior. California are the secular people. North Carolina are very religious. I cannot talk to him on Sunday or on Wednesday because he goes to church. He has church work to do. And it's not that you go from bump to bump to bump and again a new culture. What I learned is to respect. I have a new culture to absorb. What I managed to do with all those kind of changes, even when I came back to Israel, I wasn't there here in Israel, although I came to visit on a regular basis. And every year I was here several times, coming to Israel several times, but still living in Israel after I wasn't here for almost 30 years, the culture had been changed. All of a sudden, I started to face certain difficulties. I started to face a different mindset. The world has completely changed. Now, it's not about struggling again and again, but it's about, okay, I'm now going to enter a new culture, and I have to respect it. And I've learned to start to ask questions. Okay, what do I do here? What kind of questions should I ask? Help me with the culture, even though I'm supposed to be an Israeli, but I wasn't here for 30 years. So things have been changed. Can you help me? And now with the consultancy business that I used to do it with my customers, with the diamond customers, that most of the time I spent with them, I was on consultancy, actually what I'm doing now. But now I put away the diamond business almost on the ice and concentrating fully on the consultancy. It's a completely, it's again a different culture. And it's a completely again a different language. And for example, academia. I went to England. I went to UK. I know my sister-in-law is British. I know her and her family, and I have a lot of friends from the UK, and they are British to the bone. But when I had to enter academia in the UK, it's a completely different world. It's a new world. And again, I had to learn. I had to understand. I think every time that I go and meet new people, I go meet people from different culture, from different worldview, from different way of thinking, this, you know, gives me a new facet in my understanding. And I remember, I gave you a small, short description. I can go on and on and tell you stories. I told you I had in my cohort, I had an Nigerian colleague.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Very interesting. His PhD was, unfortunately he left us after 2 years. I don't know why, but, he was brilliant, and his PhD was something that I imagine people from, people come from Africa, or people, for example, I do business in Eastern Europe, who can relate to it. He was working for a German company, a large German company, which base was in South Africa. And now you can imagine the Western white people trying to do business in Black Africa.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And the I'll put it in a kind of a joke. You know, when they're trying to do business in Nigeria, when the contract is not a contract, the date is not respected, and even then you can't sue anybody, because if you are the white who's suing a black guy, most probably the judge is going to rule against you. And if you try to bribe, the other guy is going to bribe as well. So no assurance. And they were, and this German company was at loss. How can we do business in Nigeria? And this guy named Falabi, who was a Nigerian, very intelligent, told them, "You are a first world company trying to do business in a third world economy. You have to understand what they are doing, because there's logic over there. Because we cannot come and say nothing is working, nothing is respected, it's all corrupted. Still people are doing business. That means there is logic within what you think chaotic life. There is logic in what you think, what you call third world." And he started his PhD, and I could relate to him. I could understand, okay, Nigeria still has a very strong economy. Nigeria is still a big country. They're doing business. You just have to figure out how to do business. You just have to figure out the rules. You have to know, that you cannot apply German rules in Nigeria, in Black Africa. And once you understand it, everything is fine. I remember when we worked in Africa, we worked in Sierra Leone, and it was fine. We had to know the way how to do business. You can't impose. That's what moving from one culture to another teaches you. You are one person. Culture is very, very big, very, very strong, because there are many people who behave completely differently. So you don't have to adapt. I didn't have to be a Belgian or a Dutch person. I would never be. And all of a sudden to become an American or Japanese, I cannot be. But I have to respect. I have to understand that I am dealing in a culture, in a culture that has certain logic, it has certain roots, and it has certain customs, and I have to respect it, and I have to know how to move within that culture. It's not easy, but it's fun.
Okay, so I have a few questions, because you've given us a fascinating journey, and I love how you're such a good storyteller. So the greatest point that I love there is understanding that when you go to different cultures, you have to learn that custom, and it's not about changing who you are, but it's about respecting the culture and then making sure that you understand how to do business in Nigeria and Nigeria, and not have a German type of mentality. So
in Japan, I used to come there and say, "I'm a gaijin, I'm a foreigner."
Yeah.
So I don't want to insult you, but please tell me how to behave. I want to learn.
Gotcha. So that's what I was going to ask you. So how did you find out which ways to behave? You ask questions, is what you're saying.
You ask, tell openly, "Listen, I'm going to insult you because I don't understand your culture. Okay. I might insult you, and I'm sorry beforehand about it."
Gotcha.
But when you talk to somebody, you say, "I like you. I know that you like me. I don't mind insulting you by mistake, because you are going to correct me and you are going to straighten me up." Yeah. But imagine when I move from you, I move to somebody who won't be as generous as you. And even if I don't want to make a mistake by him, you correct now. Please correct now my mistakes. And that's what happened is when you say to somebody, "You are generous, you are nice, you are kind," and actually you understand that if I insult you, I insult you by mistake. You already excuse yourself. What can you say? You insulted me? Yes, of course. I told you beforehand that I'm going to insult you, but it's by mistake that I'm learning. And you have the full right to correct me.
Yes.
So he can't get upset about you, upset with you. And it starts to be fun because you learn. You learn new things. Yeah. And you move to the other person and say, hey, I learned something today I didn't realize because in Japan, I'm a gaijin, I'm a foreigner. I didn't realize that there's a custom by you. There's a custom by you. But I learned that I have to behave this way. And yeah, sometimes they would accept it. Sometimes they would develop on it.
Yeah.
Not exactly what you understood. You have to polish it further. Fine. Share with people. Admit to your shortcoming.
Yeah. Don't be afraid to ask questions, and don't be afraid to admit admit what you don't know. You know, the ignorance that you have in the culture.
Yeah.
It's okay. All right. As we get ready to close here, why don't you tell us what you're up to? Because you are such a good storyteller. You've told us so many different stories of culture, of important, of respect, of curiosity, and your career. But I'm curious, how do you work with people now? What do you do in terms of business, and how can people who want to do what you do start?
I don't know where to start. Actually, I have a few funny advisors. Don't start big. That means when I say don't start big, people want to be famous, for example. So you found out something and you want to tell the entire world about it. And you say, okay, how can I tell the entire world about it? I'll take a PR company and I'll I'll make advertisement and I'll take a few billions of dollars and make myself famous. This is wrong. Don't spend a penny or close to it. Try to think about how can I reach people. You have something that can help the world. Think how can I can reach people who can appreciate it. Not only don't spend money. Spend time. That's fine because those who start their business have plenty of time on their hand, but they don't have the money. So spend your time. That's what you have now. Don't spend money. Then another thing is, another advice I can give is, who needs you? What happens if you won't have this business? If you won't have this brilliant idea, what will happen to the world? Not to you. You won't have a business. But what will happen to the world? And if not, keep on asking. And if not, something, or are you doing just repeating what everybody else is doing, but you think that you are a kind of a me too, or you have something special to give, something unique, something different, something that others didn't think about. And be clear about it, because that's what makes you different from the other. That's about you. Third point is, who is your customer? Ask a question, who your customer is. For example, imagine that you have a pharmaceutical company. You produce medicine. Who your customer is? The immediate answer might be the patient. But the patient have no say. He has no say. He comes to the physician and tells, I'm suffering from something, from a certain ailment. And the physician will prescribe him something. And you want the physician to prescribe your medicine, not the competition's medicine. So your customer is a physician. So why the physician would prescribe your medicine and not others? Ask this question. Now, don't try the easy thing. Don't try it, for example, because you are cheaper. Because this is a never-ending story. Then you fight on price. So you are cheaper today. The competition can, you didn't blood the competition. Competition, it will be cheaper tomorrow. You can block legally the competition. For example, what if you sign a contract? Because you sign a contract with one physician, and the competition will sign a contract with another physician. So, and the contracts tend to be broken down, and somebody will find a loophole, and you lose a contract. And what will happen then? So there's another question that you have to look for. And all those questions, understanding what means competition, how can I offer something that will make me more profitable? How can I, what actually my market is? Don't look for market share. Define what your market is, and then you ask how many people are in this market. It might be Apple, largest company in the world by capitalization, very profitable, has a market share of about 10%. That's it. They never had more than 10% market share. But still they became the largest company in the world. Don't try to rule the entire world. Don't try to eat too much. Try to do what you do best. And I can go on and on with advices like this that has to be developed. People has to digest it, has to swallow it. It's quite difficult because I don't see your listeners. I don't know what their problem is. So I cannot be specific about their problem. So I give now kind of general ideas.
Sure. So I mean, I can give you some information. So my listeners are mostly millennials, you know, between 21 and 45 for the most part. Yeah, a lot of times. I think the larger audience are the 21 to 35, and then the second largest is the 35 to 45, and then we have people that are a little older to listen and people that are a little younger. And they're interested in making an impact, they're interested in working across cultures, and they're interested in knowing how their business can solve problems.
Great. So I gave you some ideas to think about.
Exactly.
One thing that I would like to say, people think that they better be independent because if they are independent, they can really develop themselves fantastically. Not necessarily. Even if people are employees, they still should be able to find their own freedom within the organizations. Keep on asking questions. Why this and why that? And try to understand. It's not kind of criticism. It's trying to understand when they got certain orders, the people around them are not really bad people. They might be work under stress because they got the directives that are impossible to implement. To implement, they had deadlines to meet that are impossible. They are nervous. Who knows what? Maybe they had a fight with their wife in the morning. Who knows what the problem was? But try to understand them. Try to understand what pushes them to ask you to do something which sometimes is not real, sometimes is not useful, sometimes is not working. And then you can start to negotiate. I learned it from my son. My son is a computer developer, as a computer programmer, and he works in a big company. And when I talked to him, he told me they are so outdated with the processes. They are so outdated. They need to overhaul the entire system of working. But he's an employee. He couldn't change much. On the side, what he was doing, he started to develop a different way of doing his work. And eventually, after half a year, the boss came to him with a job and told him, within three months, you have to finish this job. After 3 weeks, he managed to come. He got the job finished. She was thrilled. It was impossible. Because when in high tech, when they tell you 3 months, you know that actually the work is for 6 months, but they expect you to work over time. And he came within 3 weeks with a solution. How did you do it? And then he explained to her what he did. He told her, I developed here a system. And by working with my system, I got these results within 3 weeks instead of 3 months, which saved the company a lot. And so they sent him to present what he developed. They started to praise him. They started to regard him in a different eye. When he comes now and say, I need some free time because I need to think about something, they know that he might come with something which might help them in a way that he didn't even expect. So he worked out his freedom, took some time, was fun. But you know, when he got his freedom with this very, very straitjacket system, it makes him very, very happy. He's an employee. He's not independent. And sometimes those independent people are in their own straitjacket. So get away of the straitjacket. Start to examine what blocks you, what kind of rules or regulations that you impose upon yourself. You don't have to. Try to look into it. Do I really have to go the way I go? And then you'll figure out that there are many other ways that you can develop yourself.
Interesting. Wow. Okay, all right. Well, before we go, where can people find out more information about you and what you're up to?
Few things. Number one, I have my blog. Actually, the blog is kind of visually is outdated. When I started it, I think about 10 or 12 years ago, it was top-notch blog. Today is outdated. We have to redo it, but the text, the content is good. People can get a lot of inspiration from the content. People can contact me on Facebook. On Twitter.
Well, I can't thank you enough. I'm sure someone's going to be listening to this and saying that you helped them. But thank you so much, though, for spending the time.
You're most welcome. You're most welcome.
I must. And thank you for just, you know, being who you are and being this amazing individual who's so forthright with information. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you.
You've just been listening to the As Told by Nomads podcast. For more ways to reach out to Tayo and to use your difference to make a difference, head over to www.tayoroxon.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style. Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.